across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. It's Tuesday, August 22nd, and it's another beautiful day to have you here up north. From wherever you're listening, across the Civic Media Radio Network, the Civic Media app, by podcast, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, we are everywhere. For the next 2 hours, we welcome you here to the State of Wisconsin Sense, where we unpack the news, the spin gets unspun, and we make the big issues uncomplicated. Here's what's coming up this morning. Trumpless, but still awfully Trumpy. We now know which Republican presidential candidates will take the debate stage in Milwaukee and which one won't grace Wisconsin with his presence. Also, another UW school announces furloughs after years of conservative budget attacks. Christina Laurie helps us wax nostalgic about school lunches in the Uplift coming up at the bottom of this hour. In our next hour, against a free press, but for more child labor. We will talk about two recent instances of Republicans getting attention for the wrong reasons. In one case, a Republican senator from here up north appears to be trying to sue a small news outlet out of business. And then that same senator and two assembly colleagues are co-authoring a new bill that would gut work permits for 14 and 15-year-olds, making it harder to protect them from mistreatment and unsafe conditions. We'll talk to State Senator Kelda Royce about those topics. Then our friend Hans Breitenmoser will be here to talk to a Wisconsin Farmers Union member who was recently at the White House to mark the one-year anniversary of the Inflation Reduction Act. Plus, Chad Holmes will be along from Bow Falls Radio to tell us what's coming up on his Wausau-based morning show later on today. We'll have the weatherology forecast from meteorologist Jennifer Vucicki, and you are going to want to keep cool over the next couple of days, starting this afternoon. And then along the way, if you want to talk about any of these topics or introduce something new to a statewide audience or a question we can ask or address for you, we have no shortage of ways for you to take part. You can call or text us at 844-967-2789. You can email us, radio@upnorthnewswi.com. You can put a comment on any one of our many live video feeds on social media, or you can text us in the Civic Media app. We'll tell you more about what Up North News is covering later today, but first we're going to say good morning down to Aaron Zommers at the Civic Media Control Center down there in Madison. Don't I make it sound so official, the Civic Media Control Center?
The world headquarters.
The world headquarters, yeah. I mean, it is a cool thing when you can build a facility that actually, from there, you could control. How many stations are there now? What is it, 19 stations or something like that?
It's honestly a little hard to keep track of.
Clearly, as we continue building out the control center. But when it's done, it's going to be so great, including the 8 stations or so that carry Up North News Radio and other Civic Media talk shows in the morning. And we appreciate that very much. Are you set for the heat wave to return?
I'll be
not that
inside.
You have a choice, but I mean, did you get to work this morning and go, oh, why did I put on corduroys and a turtleneck? I mean, are you like ready for this?
I'm wearing shorts. We're okay. Good.
Yeah, same here. It's like, okay, we're not even going to try to fake it with jeans for the first part of the day here because, you know, the fresh air is nice coming in through the windows here up on Lake Wissota, but it won't be too much longer before we're shutting that up and, yeah, warming things up here. In fact, I've got in front of me here the 6 a.m. Temperatures and forecast highs around the state right now in Lake Wissota. Up here at 68 degrees on our way to 92. Where Aaron is in Madison at 63 on the way to 90. Waukesha, you're at 63 on the way to 83. La Crosse, 69 degrees right now, and it's going to top off at 95 today. And keep in mind, all of these temperatures are going to be warmer tomorrow. Wausau, you're at 65 degrees right now on the way to 83. As I mentioned, Up North News covering a lot of stories as a separate entity here from Civic Media, but we appreciate being able to work with them every weekday morning here. Over on the website and in this morning's newsletter, you will find my column that helps set up tomorrow night's Republican presidential primary debate in Milwaukee, and we'll talk more about that in our next segment as well. Also, we will review in the newsletter an interview we actually did here on the radio a couple of weeks back with the superintendent of Beloit Schools about what's being called the penalty box. And it was probably an accidental one. That big funding deal that Governor Evers and legislative Republicans worked out, it appears one of the things that slipped their mind was a Republican law from 2017 that said any school district that has had a failed referendum does not get an increase in minimum state aid for 3 years. Think about that. You go through all the work to hold a referendum because you're so short on cash, and you go to the voters and say, you know, could you increase our revenue limits? If that referendum fails by even one vote, you're in a penalty box for 3 years on getting increased help from the state. Now, Governor Evers proposed, you know, getting rid of that, and Republicans threw it out of his state budget bill. Democrats in the legislature brought it up as an amendment in the state budget debate, and Republicans rejected it. But now, Republican legislators are learning that there are a lot of school districts in their districts that are going to be in that penalty box and lose out on funds, or lose out on funds for other reasons. And now suddenly they're writing a bill to address it this fall, but it might be a little too late. So look for that story again on our website or in our newsletter, which you can sign up for at that same news site, website, upnorthnewswi.com. And also on our social media sites, post about with school being back in session shortly, look out for those school zone speed limits. You need the stopping distance just in case. All right, we'll preview the Milwaukee presidential debate next. You're up north.
She said, you don't know it, boy, but you just blew it. And I said, well, that's my story and I'm sticking to it. That's my story. Oh, that's my story.
That would be Colin Ray, the 90s country singer, not the Brewers pitcher. The singer is 63 years old today, and we will have more celebrity birthdays, our history lesson, and music break coming up later this hour. The Brewers pitcher, Colin Ray, did a fairly good job filling in when the starting rotation was decimated by injuries, but right now he's at AAA Nashville, no doubt hoping to work his way back up, you know, earning the spot rather than just because the pitching staff becomes a MASH unit from time to time. The Brewers were off yesterday after that extremely impressive sweep of the Texas Rangers. Now we'll see if they can keep it up with a short two-game series against the Minnesota Twins, who lead the American League Central Division. And so those teams square off at American Family Field about 7:10 or 7:15 tonight. And in the Fox Valley, you can hear that game on Oshkosh Air Support, 98.3, 1100 AM. And over in the Richland Center area, catch the Brewers on WRCE News from the Center, 107.7 and 1450 AM. As always, as we go through the headlines here, if you want to vent about them, react, share what else is on your mind, reach out to us at 844-967-2789. Email us or comment on one of the many places where you can watch us live through Facebook, Twitter, and the Up North News YouTube page as well. Well, the Republican war on education is claiming more victims, and by victims, I mean the people who are about to get a pay cut because they're going to be furloughed for a time at UW Parkside. That is the latest school to announce furloughs. UW Oshkosh was the first. UW Platteville is considering, you know, the same thing happening. And in Parkside, the announcement came yesterday, and let me pull some details out of an article from Kelly Meyerhofer in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Basically, the idea has been floated in a lot of campus communities, and while UW System President Jay Rothman said the announcements are disappointing and unfortunate, they are also not unexpected. And he said campuses should be focused on recruiting and educating students to meet Wisconsin's workforce needs. And that right there then helps illustrate what the problem is. The UW system has a president who was plucked out of the business community and who believes that our universities are supposed to just meet Wisconsin's workforce needs and not to actually provide a well-rounded higher education. Still, despite having a system president from the business community, Republican legislators saw that as not good enough. When the UW system continued to do the radical notion of embracing, you know, diversity and inclusion, the Republicans in the legislature penalized the UW system again with a record $7 billion budget surplus. Not only did they not give the UW system a single dollar more than last year, they actually cut the UW system budget by a symbolic amount equal to what they said was being spent on these quote-unquote woke programs. Whereas Governor Evers proposed a $305 million increase. At Oshkosh, there's going to be a 2% campus-wide budget cut reorganization. They're going to increase some faculty teaching loads, reduce the amount of faculty overloads, and that's when professors get additional pay for teaching courses beyond their normal load. UW Parkside is facing a budget shortfall of at least $4 million this year, and it will likely take more than a year to recover from it, according to an official there. And so these furloughs are happening there. They may happen at Platteville next. Still have to wait and see if it happens in other schools. And look, it's understandable, I guess, if some people want to say, well, is this just part of a bloated higher education bureaucracy? And this is this a thing that will actually help them live within their means, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. No, we're furloughing people, meaning they're cutting their pay or making them take unpaid time off. That's going to lead them to go elsewhere, much like we've done with some of the best and brightest public school teachers in Wisconsin since Act 10. And in case anybody forgot, we're in competition with every other state. We're losing students right now who would otherwise go to the UW College of Engineering because other schools in the Big Ten have invested in those schools. Those schools are jobs pipelines. Wisconsin Republicans rejected doing any additional work at the UW-Madison College of Engineering, and they cut the budget for the UW system. In both cases, an open invitation to all of our competing states around us saying, fellas, ladies, take them in. Take Wisconsin's best and brightest as we continue to throttle these so-called elitists because woke. That's near as I can figure is the reason for that. And you can read between the lines if you want to talk more about why people are against quote-unquote wokeness. So stay tuned, but I fear that there is still more to come about what we used to consider the crown jewel of Wisconsin, the UW system and our public schools, and the continued attack on them, which is truly eating our seed corn. We now know who is going to be appearing on the stage and who is not in Milwaukee for a debate that will be Trumpless, but still plenty Trumpy. Like Joe Zepecki said on our program back on Thursday, the headline coming out of this debate, no matter who's on that stage, will be Trump looms large. Because he will. Because he's still the front runner. Because he is still, astoundingly, some 30 to 40 points ahead of the rest of the competition based on the polling. I guess maybe it's not that astounding when you consider the caliber of the others who are trying to succeed Trump. So let's look at who's on that debate stage. Well, we've got the white supremacist Florida governor, Ron DeSantis. We've got the failed vice president, Mike Pence. We've got Chris Christie, who is the biggest Trump critic, but is also fatally flawed because how dare he actually be nice to Barack Obama during a natural disaster. And then there's that whole Bridgegate thing where he actually had his own constituents bottled up in traffic jams to teach a lesson to some kind of political opponent. You've got Nikki Haley and Tim Scott, both from South Carolina. You've got Asa Hutchinson, the former governor of Arkansas. You've got North Dakota governor, who? Anybody? Anybody at all? Doug Burgum. Come on, of course, you knew that. North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum, candidate for president, will be on that stage, as will entrepreneur Vivek Ramaswamy. Perry Johnson did not make it on the stage. He's a businessman who previously tried to run for governor of Michigan. The mayor of Miami, Francis Suarez, did not make it to the stage. And Larry Elder, a talk show host who made a failed run for governor of California, will not be on the stage. And in some cases, that's not necessarily a bad thing. Again, for some of these people, their claim to fame was they ran for governor and lost. So they don't have any electoral experience. And if we've learned nothing in the past 7 years, can it be that government is not a business? And if business is your only experience, you're going to fail. Public service and elected office at the highest levels is not for amateurs. You can call Barack Obama a community organizer all you want, but then he was a state senator, and then he was a U.S. senator. He did not go from the CEO suite into the Oval Office having virtually no idea how the levers of government work, with having never had to actually please constituents before and work for them, which is far different than just trying to put money in the pockets of your shareholders. So the question has to be asked, does an alternative emerge for at least a few of the people right now who say they're just for Donald Trump? Will they look at the debate tomorrow and say, well, you know, maybe I'll have to take another look at this person? Does Ron DeSantis win over the increasing number of skeptics, or does he continue to be the Scott Walker of the 2024 presidential field? And by the way, I forgot to mark this last week. Speaking of Scott Walker, I want to congratulate North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum, because today marks 75 days that he has been a presidential candidate. North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum's 75 days as a candidate has already outlasted Scott Walker's presidential campaign, which lasted 72 days. So congratulations again, Governor Burgum. I think that's what your name is. So does he become the next Scott Walker? Does Vivek Ramaswamy continue to gain ground as he's been doing in the polls? Or do folks figure out that he's got these goofball positions like raising the voting age to 25 and handing out guns to the people of Taiwan? He's also said that he hasn't held formal practice sessions for the debate because he doesn't want to be, quote, overly prepared. I don't think there's any danger of that. Does a Trump critic like Chris Christie, does he reach some of these folks who are, if you've seen the Barbie movie, it's almost like, you know, if you say the right words, you break them out of the trance. And maybe that's what Chris Christie is hoping to do. Is Chris Christie our Barbie? Is Mike Pence the actual nominee in waiting? Oh, sure. Everybody says they hate him right now. But do other Republican voters figure out he's got all of Trump's positions without the whole thing about, you know, maybe going to prison for trying to steal an election? I think that's the one. Don't sleep on Mike Pence. Yeah, he's sitting down there at 2% right now. But look at the others who were left for dead in the past who became the nominee. You know, there was John McCain, who was all but, you know, gone at one point. There was Joe Biden, who was all but gone at one point. So again, in August of the year before a presidential election, don't count out anybody yet, and don't assume that somebody is the nominee. You have to go through steps like this debate, and so that's why people will be paying attention tomorrow. It's not that it'll necessarily decide their vote in November of next year, but it is part of the winnowing process, because they actually have to talk to one another and answer questions they might not be expecting. And then how do they think on their feet in that situation? I hope that they are asked substantive questions about real issues. It's going to be one of the hottest days in a long time in Milwaukee tomorrow. Will they be asked about the climate? And will they all stick with the party line of it being some kind of a hoax, or, you know, we just don't know enough yet, when they could be embracing an economy that is rooted in creating the jobs of the future in clean energy sectors? For those of you who are interested, yes, I did prepare bingo cards. I've got all kinds of good things on there that we're waiting for the candidate to say, like the Democrat Party and Green New Deal and Build the Wall and CRT and Dr. Fauci. And so I'm going to have a couple of cards handy, and I'm going to let you know which one is the winner come Thursday morning. All right, we're going to take a break here, get some more uplifting news in the Uplift from Christina Laurie, telling us about some of the stories coming up in the daily newsletter. That's all ahead. Wherever you're listening across Wisconsin this morning, when you're here, you're up north. We'll be right back. And now we're back with the Uplift as we talk to Christina Laurie, who puts together the morning newsletter that you can get from Up North News over at upnorthnewswi.com. Just click newsletter in the top banner. Christina, good morning. How are you?
I'm great. How are you, Pat?
Good, thanks. I'm already off my early breakfast, but we're going to start thinking about lunch right out of the get-go here. Something that I know we covered yesterday with Representative Christina Shelton as well. But on the topic of school meals, lunch and breakfast, there is also a champion in that area in Governor Tony Evers. Tell us a bit about what he has been proposing.
Well, the numbers in Wisconsin, just first to backtrack to those, about people who don't have enough to eat are really alarming and not something that we talk about nearly as frequently as we should be. Because in our state, about one in 16 people doesn't have enough food to eat every day. That's 400,000 Wisconsinites. And half of them are children. So then when you do those numbers, one in eight school-age kids comes from a family where food is hard to come by, and they're not guaranteed to know when or how they're going to be able to afford their next meal. So that's why this program is so important. This isn't just a handout to give out for the sake of handouts. These are very hungry kids that arrive at school. And Pat, what is life like for you when you're hungry? You can't really think of anything else. Your stomach is grumbling. You're focused, like you mentioned. I'm already focused on lunch as well. I wake up already thinking about my next meals of the day. So Governor Evers basically has a plan. He has a budget for it. He's budgeted for it, rather, I should say, to provide free breakfast and lunch for every K-12 student in Wisconsin. And not only is this so important for the one in eight kids that doesn't have enough food to eat, however, it's really important to reduce the stigma around that. Kids are already so mean. They find anything to bully other kids on. So if we just level the playing field and leave out free food for everyone, then the kids who need it don't feel like they're any different. And of course, I do want to bring up how we would pay for it, because that's always a big question. The price tag for this program would be $121 million. However, Wisconsin has a nearly $7 billion budget surplus. We have more than enough money to fund this. And rewind just 2 years ago, we were already paying for this during the 2021-2022 school years. So we do have a track record of doing it well. And I talked to Michael Gasper. He's the director of nutrition services for the Holman School District. And he said that when all students were offered free breakfast, 60% of them took it. And before the pandemic, before that was offered to all the students, only 25% reported eating breakfast every day. So if we're more than doubling those numbers, we're helping kids perform better in school, making them feel like they belong, and doing something good because we can. We have the money to pay for it, Pat.
Yes. Yes, we do. And again, when you referenced, you know, when you and I get hungry, you know, the joke among adults is the word hangry, you know, that we get hangry and we think it's funny. There's nothing funny about hunger for kids. They don't get hangry. They're worried. And like you said, they're not focused. They're not learning the way that they should. And I'll say again, the fact that this is even a debate is such a sad commentary on where politics has gone in this country. Or as, you know, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz said with their new program similar to this, you know, you don't need haves and have-nots in the school lunchroom. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I mean, there are 1 million different numbers to back this up. Perhaps the most just stark that sticks out to me is that kids who eat breakfast are 20% more likely to graduate high school. On that fact and that fact alone, this should be just a non-starter.
It should be. Absolutely. But school lunches, you know, are not just a discussion topic or a political issue. School lunches have taken many different forms in many ways. And, you know, some of us get nostalgic now and then about something that was either particularly good, bad, or just unusual. And so what kind of story are you working on about that?
Well, I want to throw it back to you right away, Pat. What kind of school lunch guy were you? Did your mom make you one? Did you buy it at the cafeteria?
No, I was one of those kids that, you know, again, coming from a poorer family, that we had the free and free school lunches. And that was, you know, a lot of times my only hot meal of the day. And there was something about the pizza. And people, you know, when they get nostalgic, they'll sometimes talk about they came in these large rectangles. And depending on either your point of view or your school, it was like the very best thing or the very worst thing. And in my case, it was the best. It was like as close as you were going to get to like a deep dish pizza. It like had a really thick bread like crust on it. But, you know, it sure was good, whatever it was. So that's the one I really remember.
You had me at deep dish. You know who you're talking to.
I know. I know.
I was always envious of kids like you because my mom always packed my lunch, and every single day I still make fun of her for it because she gave me applesauce in my lunchbox every day. And now I have an aversion to it just because I had it way too many times all the way from kindergarten through senior year of high school. But we had fun. I compiled a little list of the most nostalgic school lunches from back in the day. So soup in a thermos was on there. Thermoses were kind of the new innovation that only the super upper class had access to at first. How about peanut butter and marshmallow fluff sandwiches? That's something I had never had. That would have been deemed much too unhealthy for my mom to stick in my lunch. Have you had one?
I don't know that I've even heard of that. That's interesting.
I think it's a play on kind of Elvis's stuff. Elvis was always into the peanut butter,
banana. Yep.
So throw marshmallow in. I mean, it sounds great to me. This is one I definitely had, bologna sandwiches. I remember the commercials where they spell bologna.
O-S-C-A-R, yep.
And then last night's leftovers in a brown paper bag. That was not, I would have wanted that, but I always got a sandwich. But last night's leftovers, that's a good way to go. And then on here, I have never had this, and I've also seen this in the grocery store a million times. Chef Boyardee. Have you had anything from this fantastic chef?
Well, yeah, again, hearkening back to, you know, living on food stamps as we did, there was a lot of Chef Boyardee, and I got to adulthood thinking I was never going to like Italian food because it had, you know, that canned, you know, kind of pasty taste to it. And then I got to a point where I discovered, you know, real Italian cooking, and nothing against the chef, who I'm sure fed millions with his mass produced food. But no, I don't think I ever had it for a school lunch. I definitely had enough of it that, much like you to applesauce, I now have this aversion to it.
You're right. There is that metallic taste to pretty much anything you get in a can from a store. So I wouldn't want that to mix with Italian. But if some of these sound good, I mean, I might be on board the peanut butter and marshmallow fluff train. I'm going to try that this week. But we also did compile a list of 8 different Wisconsinized school lunch recipes that you might want to try. So whether you're making it for yourself or one of your kids, you can head to our website, and that story is already up there right now.
It doesn't include an old fashioned and a thermos, does it?
It does not. We tried to stick age appropriate. We stuck to things like garlic bread pizza sandwiches, Wisconsin charcuterie box for kids, but you know, you can do what you want.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm getting totally off base here, but when you do school lunch nostalgia, I also thought of school lunchbox nostalgia. And so a quick look at the Google machine brings back some of the lunchboxes, the metal lunchboxes. I didn't have one, but I would be so jealous of friends who had, you know, one with Charlie Brown, or here's one with Hee Haw. Here's one with the Monkees that was on it. Evel Knievel. Can't forget that one. Dukes of Hazzard, H.R. Puffin stuff, all in those metal lunchboxes that didn't just help feed you in the middle of the day, but sometimes could be, shall we say, wielded as a club if need be at the bus stop if somebody was getting out of hand. But anyway,
I was going to say I had a soft lunchbox, but it always had an ice pack in it. So I remember several times, you know, whipping that at my brother while waiting at the bus stop.
Look at you right off the top rope there. All right. Last thing around here, we're moving now from lunch to supper. And again, the quintessential Wisconsin Supper Club. And you're doing something new along that topic.
Yes. Well, first, just calling it supper something that's universal among Wisconsin? Like, did you grow up calling it supper instead of dinner?
Yes. Yeah. Where I was growing up, it was supper. Dinner was like the thing you had on Sunday. It was kind of like the larger lunch is the way we thought of it. Then later on, people started using dinner as the evening meal. But no, I grew up with supper as what you called it.
Okay. I thought supper was something super fancy. My family was a dinner person. However, when we're talking about supper clubs, obviously that's what we're calling them. And a little known fact is that less than 2 weeks away on August 31st is National Supper Club Day. So we are putting out a call. We are asking all of our followers, listeners, readers to share their favorite Wisconsin Supper Club with us, because the state is home to more than 250 at the last count. So we can't personally check out them all, but we would like to add more to our list so that we can do thorough reviews on your guys' favorite supper clubs. But first, we just need to know where those are. So we have a little post up on the homepage of our website. It's the second story right now. And if you go there, it's just two simple questions. You click the part of Wisconsin you live in, and then you share your favorite supper club in the region that you live in, or whatever you check. If your favorite is in a different region where you live, just check where the supper club is. We divide the state into five, and then we're going to, in honor of National Supper Club Day, less than 2 weeks away again, we are going to share the best, your guys's top-ranked supper club in every segment of Wisconsin. But I know I'm putting you on the spot, Pat. Do you have one off the top of your head that comes to mind as your absolute favorite?
Oh, we have a couple here, and I've been to both of them recently, both High Shores and the Wissota Lodge. They're both on Little Lake Wissota over here, but we don't have nearly as many as we used to. Some have closed up over the years. Others have changed ownerships. Connell's is no more up here, but when you find a good one, and we've got a couple here, you just enjoy them. And it reminds me that, gosh, it's been almost a year now since we had Ron Fayola on, who literally wrote the book on Wisconsin supper clubs. He's written, I think, three different supper club books. And so it reminds me, mine are someplace, and take those out. So if people are going to submit things, go ahead and submit your favorite, but feel free to, it's kind of like looking in the back of the math textbook at the answers. Feel free to look at one of Ron's books and get inspired to go someplace that maybe you haven't been for a while.
Yeah, I actually got my favorite supper club from his book. He has an update coming up later this fall. I do think it's his fourth edition of the book, but my favorite is in Madison called Toby's Supper Club. They're one of the ones that not only gives you the free relish tray when you're there, but homemade cinnamon rolls. And I have never seen that. I am a sucker for a good bread basket. And pretty much the only way to improve upon that would be to offer a cinnamon roll that is hot out of the oven with that melty glaze. It's amazing. I would recommend that always.
That is, yeah, that's definitely a new twist. And one is definitely,
we went full circle, Pat. We started with lunch, dinner, and now we've moved on to dessert/breakfast.
And now I've moved on to hangry. So with that, it's probably time to take a commercial break here before too long. Christina Laurie does all this and much more in our newsletter. Catch it every morning in your inbox by your email machine. Just go to upnorthnewswi.com and click on newsletter and subscribe there. Thanks, Christina. Have a great week.
You as well, Pat.
All right, got just enough time to tell you that Up North News merchandise is here. We have apparel, merchandise, shirts. We have shirts. We have t-shirts. We have tote bags. And to get a look at those, the colors and the designs, you would head over to our homepage, upnorthnewswi.com, and you would select store. in the top banner. Those of you watching the live video feed on social media can see them. I'm going to describe them for you right now. There's certainly one that simply says Up North News, has our logo on there, and we'd love to have you fly in our colors. There's one where we have fun about the whole concept of Up North, and it simply asks, am I up north right now? And people will give you an answer, depending on which side of 29 you're on, or 8 or 10, as the case may be. There's Wisconsin Needs Local News, there's beer and cheese and voting rights, and there is a dictionary definition of bubbler that we think you'll like to share. So click store in the top banner of upnorthnewswi.com and get yourself an Up North News t-shirt. All right, today's history lesson and music break is coming up next. You're up north.
And I know it's gonna be a lovely day. Da, 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 da.
Baby, 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 don't leave me. Ooh, please don't leave me.
Of course. All by myself. That's Diana Ross and the Supremes. Where did our love go? Number one song this day in 1964, and it would be the first of five consecutive number one songs put out by the Supremes. If you've got a Cadillac, happy anniversary to you. The Cadillac Motor Company was founded this day in 1902 by Henry Ford, who'd walked away from his Henry Ford Motor Company and started a new company that would eventually become Cadillac. The most lopsided game in modern Major League Baseball history took place on this day in 2007. The Texas Rangers defeated the Baltimore Orioles 30-3. Birthdays, John Lee Hooker, legendary blues guitarist, born this day in 1917. Passed away in 2001. We'll hear a little tune from him later in the show. Happy 60th birthday to Tori Amos. Tori Amos was born Myra Ellen Amos to a religious family in North Carolina. She changed her name and later became an alt-rock icon of the 1990s with songs about women and right-wing politics and religious oppression. Again, Tori Amos is 60 years old today. Happy birthday to Dua Lipa, who's 28 today. It is Paul Molitor's birthday today. Paul Molitor, the famous brewer and twin, is 67 years old today. We mentioned earlier that country singer Colin Ray is 63. Actor Ty Burrell from Modern Family, Mr. Dumphy, is 56 years old today. So that makes him 3 years younger than me. Don't you hate when you get an age and you go, oh, you're younger than me? Okay, well, Ty Burrell, 56. And comedic actress Kristen Wiig is 50 years old today, Saturday Night Live alum. The number one song this day in 1987 was from Madonna. And if you're left saying, who's that song or where's that song from, it was the title song to a movie starring Madonna that was almost as forgettable as the tune itself. Here's the number one song for this week in 1970, and then we're going to compare and contrast with a song from a more modern age. But this was the number one song from Bread this day in 1970. Kind of want to do the announcer voice, you know, from a particular station to go, you're listening to Yacht Rock Radio. So contrast that with that song we could play, but as Aaron knows, we can't play really the number one song from this day in 2020 by Cardi B and Megan Thee Stallion. WAP hit number one this day. I mean, we could play it, but you wouldn't hear much of it, would you?
Well, there's two options. Either we play the normal version and cost Civic Media a lot of money and probably cost me my job, or we play the censored version, which is just a lot of silence.
Yeah, a lot of silence or a lot of beeping, depending on how it's censored. But that there's a little difference in number one songs when you go ahead exactly 50 years apart from 1970 to 2020. That's what's happened to music.
Just a little bit different.
Just a few changes there, yeah. Let's dip into the mailbag for a moment here. We got a couple of comments online from Roger referencing our discussion earlier about the presidential primary debate. And he criticizes the former vice president, saying Mike Pence can't even think on his own. He sought advice from Dan Quayle before January 6th, reminding Pence that he needed to follow the Constitution, which, yes, does, again, remind us we're now living in an age where we are thankful to Dan Quayle and Liz Cheney, things I don't think any progressive ever thought they would say in modern history. But I guess this is where we are, right? And then to follow up on that, we have Ben, who caught the Dan Quayle reference and said, speaking of Dan Quayle, I need to harvest potatoes. Potatoes? Potatoes. And he spells it both ways, either with the ES or just the S. And that was a viral moment at the time before. This was before the internet, and it was a viral moment. But that's what makes me want to ask the young fellow here down in the Madison studio, are you even familiar with the Dan Quayle potato controversy?
Nope, not at all.
Wow. See, now that's you think a moment is just going to last in, you know, in perpetuity? No. So Dan Quayle's running for re-election with George H.W. Bush in 1992 against Bill Clinton. I want to say it was 92. Shoot, now I got to look. It might have been earlier than that. And people were saying, you know, Dan Quayle, what's he doing on the ticket? He's not very experienced. He's not very, you know, bright was frankly the way it was put to people. And there was this clip of him. Yes, it was 1982, June of 82. He was, I guess, in a classroom, and it was working on flashcards for spelling. And he was helping some kids spelling. And he misspelled potato. He spelled it P-O-T-A-T-O-E. He put an E at the end of potato.
That's not how you spell that.
That's not how you spell it. It's how you spell toe, T-O-E, but not potato. You know, you put the E there. If you're going to make it plural, then it's an E-S. Well, anyway, at the time, and again, no internet there, but it was all over the TV, and it was a running joke for the longest time. But I guess it really does go to show you that no matter how embarrassing a moment you have, not everything lasts forever. I mean, we can still dredge it up from time to time, but it's not going to be an everyday thing. So if you're not caught up in Dan Quayle not being able to spell potato on one day in 1992, I guess the republic will last. You know,
I guess so. But you know, it's not all amazing, because you know, in a similar vein, it used to be that finding a typo in a newspaper or any other publication was a rarity. Now it's a rarity to find one without a typo, a grammatical error, a repeated sentence, anything like that.
That is a really good point. I actually, one of the things I stopped doing as a former TV person was whenever the big boys at the network level would make a spelling error on screen with a chyron or a graphic or something, I would, you know, jot it down and I would call it out. And yeah, now it just happens a little bit too often. So
it's really, really annoying, and it makes some websites really hard to read.
Yes, it does. And it's funny because we live in an age where it's easier than ever to spell check or
exactly.
to grammar check things. But, you know, when you start using, you know, the letter R instead of A-R-E, you know, or the letter U, and you're texting, and you take all these shortcuts, it shouldn't be a surprise that spelling and grammar rules themselves kind of fall by the wayside here. And That's something us nerds will have to get used to. All right, such a busy hour coming up next. Senator Kelda Royes will be here along with Hans Breitenmoser. Many topics, Chad Holmes and more. Stick around for the second hour of Up North News Radio coming up next.
Potatoes.